Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Glad you could join us today. Are you looking forward to eating a slice of pie this Thanksgiving, or maybe making one yourself? Pie is a classic finale to a holiday feast. It's comforting and distinctly American. Do you like pumpkin or sweet potato pie? Pecan or apple? We know many people discovered baking during the pandemic, but turning out a flaky pie crust can be intimidating to new bakers. Today, we're taking some of the mystery out of pie baking, and we'll talk about why we love pie, how does pie nourish our family and cultural traditions. And you can also share your favorite pie recipe with me by going to nprnews.org/tell. And we will publish a few of them on our website. I want to hear from you, too, this hour on the phone. The phone lines are open. If you make pies, tell us the story behind your favorite recipe. Share your tips for this. You can also ask our pie experts this hour your pie questions. And if you're just a grateful pie eater, what do you love about them and what kind do you like? The number to call is 651-227-6000. Or you can call us at 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. Let's bring in our first two guests. We have Rachel Swan on the line. Rachel is the co-owner and chief pie baker at Pie and Mighty in Minneapolis. After years working in the restaurant industry, she started selling pies by subscription in 2016, and she and her partner opened the brick and mortar shop Pie and Mighty in 2020. They're in South Minneapolis. Hi, Rachel. Good morning.
Good morning, Angela. It's so good to be with you. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to talking to you. We also have on the line Ken Heydrick, and Ken is founder of the online pie-making community called thepieacademy.com and the author of 16 cookbooks, including a comprehensive guide published last year. It's called Pie Academy, Master the Perfect Crust, and 255 amazing fillings with fruits, nuts, creams, custards, ice cream, and more. Ken is joining us from Wilmington, North Carolina this morning. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Angela. How are you?
I am very well today. Later in the hour, we will talk with Twin City chef LaShelle Cunningham, who runs the catering business Shell's Kitchen. She'll tell us why sweet potato pie is the tradition for many Black Americans. And she is, of course, was one of the founding executive chefs at Baking Bread Cafe in North Minneapolis, which serves a variation of her uncle's sweet potato pie recipe. All right, Rachel, let me start with you. Tell me about the very first pie you made, because apparently it was just only back in 2016.
It's true. The very first pie that I ever made was, it kind of happened by accident. I used to purchase pie plates for the restaurant that I used to work for, Pizzeria Lola, and so in my spare time I just shop at thrift stores and I look for cute fun plates that Ann Kim's restaurants might be able to use, and I looked down and I saw this sort of ceramic old timey plate, Watkins, the classic spice company. And it was for a deep dish apple pie, and I'd never made anything, you know, I'd never made a pie before, but I had a dream of having a pie shop, and I had a baker that was going to work with me, and that didn't actually come to fruition. But anyway, I thought, what the heck, I'll just try, and it was a deep dish apple pie. And it was not awful. It was
okay. That's encouraging because not awful.
Yeah, it was not awful. It was not, you know, beautiful by any stretch, but it tasted really fantastic, and I was just, from the very first pie, I was addicted.
So addicted to just the process of baking pies? What do you love about this?
Yeah, so, I think I'm one of those people who really enjoys making something, like you know, starting a project and then going through the steps and then having something on the other side of it that that not only, you know, that I personally can enjoy, but I can share it with friends and family and, you know, anyone. It's something that, you know, like very many bakers and cooks, like it's just, there's something magic and sort of beautiful about starting with raw ingredients and then just, you know, being able to share that with people that you care about.
It is fun, right? Watching people's reactions when they take that first bite.
That is, Angela, you are talking about the exact reason why I decided to do this in the first place, was that it's that first moment, that first bite, where somebody is transported to some other place in time that just feels like I've done good work in helping people to connect with some other memory, some other time, or if not that, to just be really involved in the moment.
Ken, in your experience, why do you find people like pie, like talking about pie, like eating pie, like baking pie? What have you found?
I love Rachel's story. and one of the reasons is for this, because I hear from so many people, and perhaps a surprising number of them are men, who tell me that, you know, their work week requires them to do oftentimes, you know, mind-numbing work in front of a computer, or they just do something that they don't really relish, and they can't wait for the weekend because it's their chance to dive into the raw ingredients, and they have found pie making so so rewarding, just handling the ingredients and inhaling the ingredients, and like Rachel said, sort of taking this from raw ingredients to finished pie. It's just such a rewarding thing for people. And I think that's what speaks to so many people about making pie. It's just the whole process.
So, Ken, you're the author of 16 cookbooks, many of them focused on pies. Do you have a memory of pie connected to a family tradition?
Oh, yeah. In fact, that's what started it for me. I'm one of seven children. We grew up in Plainfield, New Jersey. And every fall, mom and dad would pile us in the Woody, and we would go up into the hills around Watchung, New Jersey. And they would stop at several different farm stands and buy a bunch of different types of apples. And then we'd come home, and all the kids would sit around in the kitchen, and mom and dad would proceed to make an apple pie together. And dad was the crust guy, and mom would slice the apples. And it was just so endearing. I would not have used the word at the time, but it was just so much fun to watch and to watch their interaction. They never invited the kids to actually work with them. I think it was probably one of the few things in life they could do alone. Mm-hmm. but it was just so much fun to watch them. And then, you know, a couple of hours later, they put the pie in the oven, and a couple of hours later, we'd have this wonderful, wonderful pie to eat, this apple pie. And I swear to this day, I've never had apple pie that tastes that good. And they weren't finicky like a lot of, you know, people are today. I don't even think they used butter. I think dad used the Crisco crust recipe on the side of the can.
All right. That's right. Along with a lot of other people. Rachel, I'm just doing the numbers here. You made your first pie in 2016. Fast forward to 2021. You're the chief pie baker and a co-owner of your own pie business. How do you turn a passion for pies into a business? Like, walk us through like what happened.
Sure. Well, I think the first key is having an amazing spouse. So I'm just going to shout out to my spouse, who it has from day one has just let let me sort of fall down the path. But the, you know, the, what happens is you just, you just give yourself over to the process. I was waiting tables, at the time, and, you know, one pie turned into two or three pies. And, as my pies started to become more pretty, I became more confident in sharing them with other people and sort of taking pride in my work. And that turned into my spouse saying, you know, this is an expensive little habit that you have. And so maybe you might consider asking for a little bit of money from people. And
did the conversation really go like that, Rachel?
It really did. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how the conversation went. And so I, you know, people would say, oh, can I, you know, can I pay you? And so we decided that we would basically have people pay for the ingredients and then give me a feedback form. So I could sort of hear from them what they were experiencing and what they were tasting. And the deal was that they would be willing to let me take the first slice out of the pie, because with pie making, you know, it's a whole product. So with cooking, you can sort of taste and check and see as you go. Whereas with making a pie, it's just like, it's a whole mm-hmm. thing. So yeah. Here you go. So for the first probably 5 months, I, sold whole pies with one slice missing. And then,
so the one slice you were using to taste to see if you were getting it right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, and letting people tell me what they, you know, I knew what I was taking notes. I was, you know, knowing what I tasted, mm-hmm. but having other people give their voice to, you know, the crust seemed underdone, or there was too much spice, but I really liked it, or, you know, whatever it is that people were going to say, it helped me to sort of hone my recipes and, mm-hmm. And keep, you know, and just keep going. Like, just not every pie was good. Every pie was its own unique thing. And I grew a community of people to help me, you know, figure out, I just stumbled as I went.
So eventually people then, I guess, start putting in orders and you just start making more money and baking more pies.
We, so at some point I decided that I would call myself a pie maker. So that was a couple mm-hmm. months in to 2016. And I, previously, you know, back in the day when blogs were real cool, I used to blog, I used to, be pretty active on social media. And so I told my social media and I told everyone, look, I'm not going to post about this. I'm going to send out an email. Every time I bake, I'm going to send out an email. It's going to be called the Pie Loop. And if you want to know what I'm doing and if you want to know how to order a pie, then you should get in the loop. Mm-hmm. So subscription, people signed up right away. And in the beginning, I started with, you know, mostly friends and family. It wasn't, but that, you know, that community has grown as I have. And it's basically become this, we're now up about 8,000 subscribers. And we still do the same thing. Every Monday we put out an email. The email is kind of, it's not only to say, here's what I'm making and here's how you get it, but it also is an amalgamation of different things that made me laugh or mm-hmm. different things that made me reflect on my own life or smart things that other people said that I think are just worth sharing. So I try to create sort of a conversation table, even though, you know, it's words going out,
yeah.
but
This is a great story. Yeah, I love hearing always about the entrepreneurial spirit and the, you know, the success stories. I do want to take some phone calls from our listeners because we're going to get into more about how to make some good pies and crust, get some advice. But I want to bring in our listeners here as we talk about pies. If you make pies, tell us the story behind your favorite recipe and share your advice. And if you have a question for our pie experts, go ahead and ask them. They can give you maybe some advice. And if you're just grateful to eat pie, you know, tell us what you love about them and what kind you like. 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's talk to Chris in Plymouth. And Chris, what do you want to tell us about pies?
Hi, Angela. Hi. I have been making apple pies for over 10 years and have been giving them away for free on Facebook. I've found it a good way to connect with friends and family that you don't get to talk to or see all that often. And I've got some neighbors who have trees that have an overabundance of apples, and I just hate to see them go to waste. So I started with three pies and told my friends, the first three people that reply to my comment or to my post will get a free pie in the mail. And it's been such a hit that over the years, friends and family members realize when I change my profile picture to my apple pie baking picture that they know that I'm going to be about to give away some free pies. And it's just a heartwarming way of connecting with friends again.
And Chris, do you have a family recipe or did you simply look one up? Did you experiment? You know, where'd you get your recipe from?
I have started out of the book. I have made some slight changes to the recipe, things that I think improve the taste a little bit more, the presentation a little bit more, and it's just mass production, though. I mean, when I sit down, I make a minimum of three at a time, commonly five, and I take over the kitchen, and it's just a fun way of connecting with, like I said, friends again, and it's better to give than to receive, and I get a lot of joy out of it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. That's Chris in Plymouth. Let's take another phone call in Northfield. Rebecca's on the phone. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
Hi. What did you want to ask or share about pies?
Well, first of all, after hearing all this, my Aunt Lois in Baroque, Wisconsin, made the best blueberry and blackberry pies.
Oh, I mean,
the best memories, you know, sitting around eating pies. but I have several members in my family that need gluten-free. And, you know, so you're making this meal and you have, well, this side of the table is for gluten people. And then over here, these options are for the gluten-free people. But what's really nice is if you can make something delicious gluten-free that everyone can eat.
Right. You don't have to separate it.
Right. And I'm wondering if there are gluten-free pie crust options.
All right. That's a great question, Rebecca. Ken, our cookbook author, what do you have for Rebecca and folks who want a gluten-free pie recipe?
Yes, it's quite possible to make a good one. In fact, before I wrote Pie Academy, I had not experimented all that much with gluten-free recipes. This just wasn't an issue for me. And even though I realized it was an issue for a lot of people, I had just never quite gotten around to it. But I developed a recipe for a gluten-free pie dough. It's actually on page 76 of Pie Academy. And it's a combination of non-gluten flours, including rice flour, potato starch, and tapioca flour. And so you take a measure of that, you combine it, you know, just like you would any other crust with your fat and your liquid. And I tell you, I was very, very delighted with what a wonderful crust it made. So it's easy to find a recipe out there, whether you're, you know, looking in my book or any other, you know, to find good recipes for gluten-free pie crust. It's definitely worth trying if you have people coming to your table who require that.
So it's out there. And Ken, you brought up the thing that intimidates me about making pies, because I cook and I bake. It's that pie crust.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about, well, not all about, but the crust can make or break it here. And do you find that seems to be like the most intimidating part about making a pie for some people?
Everything about the pie crust intimidates people. It's amazing because I will talk to people who are great cooks in their own right. I mean, they fear nothing, but you bring up the whole idea of pie crust and it's like, oh, I wouldn't touch a pie crust with a 10-foot pole because it just, there's just one of those things. I think what happens is that we live in a time where people, you know, expect great results, you know, first time out. And what happens is maybe they try it once or twice and it doesn't, you know, come out perfectly and they get a little discouraged and then they don't try again. But I've always said you can become 75-80% proficient as a pie maker and therefore pie crust maker in, you know, if you regularly make a pie for a few months, mm-hmm. And that remaining, you know, 20-25% is all the nuance that may take you a lifetime to master. But don't be afraid to make, you know, to make a less, as I love when Rachel talked about making her first pie and it wasn't terrible. I mean, she didn't say
win.
It was great.
That's a win.
Yeah, exactly. It was a win because I've always said, you know, anything worth doing well is worth doing poorly first. And that's mm-hmm. sort of the way it is with pie crust. You have to be willing to make some, not knowing exactly, you know, how long to cut in the fat and how much liquid to add and how do I roll this thing and keep it from sticking? Those are all little things you pick up along the way. And I think, therefore, probably the most important ingredient you can bring to the table or to your kitchen counter is a fearlessness.
Ooh, fearlessness. One of my favorite words. Rachel, I want to ask mm-hmm. this question. One of the things that comes up a lot when I look at pie recipes, at crust recipes, when they use butter, they always say it's important for the butter to be cold. What difference mm-hmm. does that make? Tell me about the cold butter.
So it's, you know, I don't know about you, Angela, or you, Ken, which, by the way, Ken, I'm just such a fan. So this is like a dream come true. But back to butter. It's, so butter, you know, melts and so butter in its coldest form, helps with, that's the element that I've found that helps the, crust flakiness occur or happen. Mm-hmm. So, butter is, basically fat and water. And when it's mixed with the flour and other items that you might add to it, and you basically you keep that crust cold the whole time. So put it in the freezer before you pop it into the oven. The shock of the hot oven makes the dough kind of poof up and flake, and the butter is the key to that happening. So cold all the way until you get it into the oven, and then it will give you those really beautiful flakes.
Wow. I see myself talking to my pie in the oven now. Like, butter, do your thing. Watching it as it bakes. And Rachel, I heard a rumor that you also work with lard when you
it's
make
true.
Pie crust. I haven't said the word lard in, I think, 20 years. So for folks who are not familiar with lard, tell people what lard is and what does that do to a pie crust?
Sure. There's all two different kinds of lard that people know about. There's leaf lard, which comes from a very specific place on a pig. And then the other is just basically pig fat.
It's a cooking fat.
So
lard is a cooking fat.
Mm-hmm. Yep, cooking fat. So I was not a lard believer. I came in being like many with an all butter crust. You know, listen to people who, older folks, people who tell stories, lard is something to be considered. So it's the thing that I think is, you know, butter offers flake, lard offers a really texture that's soft and sort of crumbly, I guess, is the thing that I think about. It's accessible everywhere. It's commonly used in all kinds of different cultures, but it's
I remember lard. My grandparents used lard. Yeah. Ken, I need to know, Ken Heydrich, are you a lard believer?
Oh, I'm a believer. I'm not a big user, just because of habit, I guess, more than anything. I use a lot of butter, a fair amount of Crisco. I love that. Mm-hmm. I was talking to your sound engineer before we came on the air, and we were talking about fat combinations, and he said he likes a combination of half butter and half Crisco, and I like that too.
Oh,
I do that a lot.
You can do that.
Or like 3/4 butter and 1/4 Crisco. I just like, well, for me, there's part nostalgia. Dad used it a lot, but even more so than that, it adds a little bit of sort of crumbliness and like mealiness to the in addition to the flakiness of the crust. And I like that.
All right. I want to make sure we get another phone call in from a listener as we talk about pies and why we love pies, how to bake pies. Before we go to news, and we have is it Neesville? Bronwyn is on the line. Good morning, Bronwyn.
Good morning. Hello, Rachel. So I have a funny story about being raised by responsible hippies in the 1970s. My mother used to use the Tassajara cookbook, and it yielded a lot of not so great food, including ironclad pie crust that you could crack a tooth on. And when I was 10 years old, I complained.
Oh, no. So you're saying a super hard crust is what you had as a child.
It was horrible. And I finally complained, and my mother kind of threw a fit because I was complaining about pumpkin pie and said, if you don't like it, you make the pie. And I was 10 years old, so my dad invited me down the hall to his office and said, write your grandmother. She knows how to make pie crust. She can teach you. So I did, and she sent me a pie crust recipe that included ice water, having to have ice cubes, and had lard. And I'd never heard of lard. So my dad helped with that, too. And my grandmother also said the pie is better if you grow your own pumpkins and make your own glurk. Mm-hmm. So I was the chief pumpkin pie grower and maker for many, many years. And now I let Rachel do all the work because her crust tastes like my grandmother's recipe.
Well, just a shout out to your dad, too. It's like, come here, baby. I can tell you where you can get a recipe because this crust is hurting my teeth, too. Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you, Bronwyn, for sharing that story with us.
Good morning, Bronwyn.
Right. I want to remind you, we're going to take a news break here, but I want to remind you, we will take more calls from listeners and talk more to our guests. And we're going to bring in a chef to talk about pies as well. But this really is a time of year for reflection and gratitude. And here at NPR News, we're so grateful for all the members who keep this public service accessible to all Minnesotans, members who make donations. And I just want to take a moment to thank some people who have made donations to us recently. I want to say thank you to Raymond and Sandra there in Matamidi. Thank you to Phyllis and William in Buffalo. Thank you, Jeff and Katina in Minneapolis. Mary Jo and David there in New Richmond. Thank you, Emmanuel and Joanna in Woodbury. Thank you to Robert and Stacy in Rochester. So many of our listeners who support us. Your financial support is what keeps us on the air so we can have these great conversations that connect us and help us to learn more about ourselves and about our state. So thank you. Okay, now back to this conversation about pies. We're learning a lot about pie recipes, what to do, what not to do, and just some of the family stories and memories that we have that have to do with pies. My guest today, we have on the line Rachel Swan, the co-owner and chief pie baker at Pie and Mighty in Minneapolis, as well as Ken Heydrich. Ken is founder of the online pie making community, thepieacademy.com, and the author of 16 cookbooks, including Pie Academy, just published last year. And we're taking your phone calls. If you make pies, tell us the story behind your favorite recipe. You can ask our experts one of your questions about pies. And if you're just a grateful pie eater, what do you love about them and what kind do you like? The number is 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Right now, we have a third guest I want to bring in. LaShelle Cunningham is a Twin City chef and runs the catering and food education business, Shell's Kitchen. Now, before that, LaShelle was founding executive chef at Breaking Bread Cafe in North Minneapolis. Good morning to you, LaShelle.
Good morning, Angela. How are you?
Hi. I wish I was in your kitchen because I know you're baking up some good stuff over there. So, Lachelle, when you helped start Breaking Bread Cafe back in 2015, I know that you put a sweet potato pie on the menu. I am from Southern Virginia, as I talk about a lot. We grew up on the farm. You know, we grew our own sweet potatoes, you know, baked sweet potatoes, made sweet potato casseroles, and also made sweet potato pies. But I'm just curious, where did your recipe come from for sweet potato pies?
Yeah, well, you know, my family, you know, I grew up eating and making sweet potato pie, too, made with my mom. But the recipe that I adapted actually was from my uncle. He has a really great sweet potato pie recipe that he wrote out, and it's literally written as if he's having a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. So used his as a starting point because he has a great recipe and just adapted a little bit, tweaked it to make it my own and, you know, a couple of little techniques that I do. So
what do you know about just the history of sweet potato pies and why, you know, for many of us, it's considered like a soul food tradition, something that many Black Americans enjoy making. What can you tell us about the history?
Yeah, I mean, I think sweet potato pie probably predates, you know, slavery. However, I think that is really when it became a staple of soul food, you know, desserts. And that really comes from, you know, African slaves. When they came over, you know, the transatlantic slave trade, they, you know, were now encountering different food crops that they weren't necessarily, you know, familiar with, but there were some similarities. So they started to gravitate towards things they were familiar with. And one of those things was the sweet potato, because in Africa there is the yam, which is indigenous there, and they were used to, and it's a larger, you know, starchy tuber, you know, mm-hmm. just like a sweet potato. And so they pretty much started to use that in its place. And then, you know, as, you know, slaves were had their hands in a lot of pots back then and created a lot of cuisine and what we now call soul food, although that name didn't come till, you know, the mm-hmm. civil rights movement. But ultimately, that pie, you know, kind of rose to the top just because of, I think, those kind of ancestral roots of familiarity, you know. So, yeah.
So when people ask you this question, because I get asked this a lot, what's the difference between the taste and the texture of a sweet potato pie and a pumpkin pie? And to me, you know, it's night and day. They kind of maybe smell the same, maybe look a little bit the same. But how would you answer that question, the difference between a sweet potato pie and a pumpkin pie?
Yeah, so I have a really strong palate. And so I can literally taste the difference between a sweet potato and a pumpkin. But I would say that the sweet potato is a little starchier and is a little bit more tacky than and has less water content than a pumpkin does. Mm-hmm. And they just have like a slightly different flavor, you mm-hmm. know. You know, sweet potato being a tuber, you know, and the pumpkin, you know, kind of sort of being more related to a melon. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, just those differences. I would say the texture, a little bit more watery and the pumpkin a little softer. And it also depends on what kind of pumpkin, or maybe, you know, you could do a variation. It's a squash, technically, a pumpkin is. So, you know, just having that kind of squash flavor. And then it also depends on what kind of sweet potato you use, right? So there's a variation of white sweet potatoes, orange sweet potatoes. There's even purple sweet potatoes, which is one I love to make sweet potato pie with. So.
And our previous two guests who are still on the line with us, we talked about the secret to the pie crust. So what can you share? Is it butter you're using? Is it, you know, lard? Are you mixing some Crisco in there? What do you recommend for pie crust?
Pie crust, I'm all about cold butter and really having the ingredients be cold. So, and you know, so you can get the flaky crust that you're looking for. I haven't tried this, but I heard that putting vodka in the crust is a way to reduce the gluten development so that you can get a flakier crust and it's not as dense, as well as the vodka actually allows you to put more liquid in because of the it doesn't have the same water content. And so it allows more ease when you're handling the dough. So I learned about that. a little bit. But to me, it's about the cold butter.
All right. Thank you.
I have not used Crisco. I have used coconut oil, though, which is interesting because coconut oil melts at room temperature. And so I had to keep it really, really cold. But that actually turned out really well also.
Well, Lachelle, we're going to take some more phone calls from listeners because they're sharing some of their favorite recipes and stories as well. The number is 651-227-6000. In St. Paul, we have Sharon on the phone. And Sharon, you're actually the owner of West Indies Soul Food Catering Business there in St. Paul. And what did you want to share with us about making pies?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So what kind of pies do you enjoy making the most and what are your most popular ones?
Actually, I'm not a baker. I'm a chef and I love cooking, but I also like using different spices to enhance the flavor of different things. And I enjoy making sweet potato pie because we make it for the Minnesota State Fair. That's one of the things that a lot of the customers come and they ask for, the sweet potato pie. I like to use brown sugar mixed with granulated sugar in my pies. I also, since I'm from Trinidad, I like to use a little tip of ginger, brown ginger, and a little bit of clove in my pie. And to me, that enhances the flavor when I'm making my sweet potato pie. And it makes it taste a little bit different from a traditional sweet potato pie.
I love spices. And can you throw spices like that into like an apple pie as well, Sharon?
Yes. Yes, you can.
And what about, I say pecan, do you make pecan pies too?
I do make pecan pies. Yes, I do.
And
what I like to do with my pecan pies also, I like to put orange in there, grated orange. Mm-hmm. And I also like to put the ginger in my pecan pies also.
It sounds like you're like me. You grab that ginger, goes in everything. Just ginger just flies everywhere when you're baking.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. That's Sharon calling in from St. Paul, the owner of West Indies Soul Food Catering Business. Let's take another phone call. In Minneapolis, Brenna is on the phone. And Brenna, how's your baking going? Do you love pies as well?
I love baking pies. And growing up, my dad's sisters and their families would be there for Thanksgiving. So my mother always made the pumpkin. And you have to use Festal pumpkin because it's grown in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And my grandma made the apple pie. And you have to make your crust with lard. My other auntie made the cherry pie, and she taught me that when I was 12. And then our other auntie made the blueberry. And the first year my sister and I were home at Thanksgiving and our parents were overseas, we called our other auntie to say, "So, Ari Mae, tell us, how do we make blueberry pie?" My sister's on the phone in the kitchen, and I'm upstairs. It's like the early 80s on the extension, because I said, okay, now, our other sister said you have to use tapioca with the blueberries, and you have to get the tiny little blueberries in the can. And our auntie is kind of hemming and hawing, and she says, "Well, girls, you know, I don't really know how to tell you this, but I've never baked a pie in my entire life." And I just took my pie pan to the local bakery, and they made that lovely blueberry pie for me every year.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was the best blueberry pie you ever had.
You're telling the family secrets. Thank you. That's Brenna in Minneapolis.
Thank you.
Ken, I want to ask you this. You wrote a cookbook devoted to apple pies with 100 different recipes. How can there be 100 different recipes for apple pies? Like, really? Are there that many different versions of apple pie?
Well, really? you would be surprised. The all the different things you can do with apples, starting with, using a portion of different fruit. People are shocked when I tell them that my favorite apple pie has half pears in it, because I love that combination of apples and pears. Pears are so, aromatic and floral and just, they smell so good. So there's all that you can do with using figs, some figs in there. You can change up the spices. I even have one recipe in there that used a jar of hot pepper jelly, not a whole jar, but about a half a cup of hot pepper jelly as part of the sweetener. So there are all kinds of things you can do with apples to change
adding,
it up.
Mm-hmm. And I know here in Minnesota, strawberry rhubarb is very popular combined with apples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing I love to do, I spent 20 years in New England when I sort of became totally fell in love with maple syrup. And one of my favorite apple pies is sweetened with half maple syrup, half sugar. So that's another one that I love.
All right. Let's take another phone call from a listener in Roseville. Marianne is on the phone. Marianne, what's going on in your kitchen?
Well, we like to make a pear anise pie with a cheese crust for
Thanksgiving.
That's fancy.
That sounds very fancy. That sounds like a lot of
work. Yeah, very fancy. And so it's a recipe from my brother because my sister-in-law created a family cookbook back in the early 80s when my children were preschoolers. So fast forward to when my grandson was, I think he was 3, maybe 4, and I served the pear anise pie, and he's such a picky eater, but here he loved this pear pie. So we always think of our grandchild when we make the pear anise pie.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you, Marianne. Rachel, I want to go back to you. We know pumpkin pie is traditional for Thanksgiving. And so what is special about the pumpkin pie at Pie and Mighty? How did you arrive at how you make your pumpkin pies?
Oh, my. Everybody's.
You don't have to give us all the secrets, but.
I was like, everybody's spilling their secrets. But, again, I don't come with any sort of culinary background. So I just started with, the Libby's recipe. And
what is that?
And then just.
The Libby's recipe. What is
well,
that?
It's just the pumpkin pie recipe on the back of the Libby's can. So every person who ever buys a can of Libby's pumpkin can get it. I don't remember what the recipe is off the top of my head, mostly because I didn't care for it. And but I think that the use of spices, Rochelle was getting at, and Ken about, like, it's just about your palate. It's just about figuring out what you like the best. I will say I think this is the first time I've ever said this out loud. The secret weapon in my pumpkin pie is black pepper.
What?
So, yep. I think because all of the spices are like they're warming spices. So mm-hmm. cinnamon and clove and for me, I add just a little bit of pepper in there and it just it takes that warming to like another kind of deep, deep place. And I think it like having a side of just a vanilla whipped cream on the side makes it over the top.
I might have to use LaShelle? That idea. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. Do you make pumpkin pies, LaShelle?
I have not made pumpkin pie. I'm more of a sweet potato pie girl. So. Right. But I think that could still work. It's similar warming spices mm-hmm. as well, cinnamon and nutmeg. Yeah, I like that a lot.
And so, Ken, is the point of this with baking, we talked earlier the difference between baking and cooking. We don't get to kind of taste and sample along the way. You just you find out at the end if it's a winner or not. But I'm just hearing like you can really experiment in many ways as you make pies.
Yeah. At some point, you've got to put it in the oven and bake it. That's why I love that story about taking out that first piece, because, even now after having baked thousands of pies, when I give a pie away, I'm always a little nervous, even though I've done it, so many times. I'd love to take out that first piece, but I'm not going to give somebody a nicely wrapped up pie and have a piece missing. But yeah, I mean, there are so many ways that you can experiment and put your own spin on things. And that's one of the things that's so nice about making a pie. You can just, you can put your own signature on it. I love that idea about the black pepper in the pumpkin pie.
You probably don't want to experiment on Thanksgiving Day. Like you may want to start practicing. A few months ahead
of time. You're experimenting a couple of weeks ahead, right?
All right, let's take another phone call as we talk about pies in Minnetonka. Jean's on the phone. Good morning, Jean.
Hi there.
Hi. What do you want to tell us?
So I want to tell you, first of all, I'm a real pie fan. I'm a judge of pies at the State Fair, and I love everything pie. Wow. But here's my tip. I don't know if anyone has said it yet on your show. When you're making pie crust, if you want a fabulous pie crust to handle, rolling it out, and also taste, instead of doing all water for the liquid in the pie crust, usually it's 4 tablespoons for a double crusted pie, substitute half of the liquid, that is 2 tablespoons, of ice cold vodka.
Yes, Chef Lachelle Cunningham just mentioned that she has done that. So where did you hear about this, or where did you get this from?
Yeah, I've known it forever. I don't even know the source, but it's absolutely foolproof. It makes it much more, it has something to do with the hydration that alcoholic liquid does something different to the absorption of the gluten of the flour so that it's easier to handle. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't become tough, and it doesn't, you know, it's just much more tender crust in the end of it, and it makes life a lot easier when you're learning how to do roll-out crust.
Wow.
So I really encourage it. Just keep a little bit of vodka in your freezer, and when the opportunity for pie making comes up, just add the vodka.
So, you know, this will play out in some families' homes, you know, like, yeah, the vodka's for the pie crust. Don't ask me any questions about why there's vodka in the freezer. We've established this.
Yeah, I know. And, of course, of like all cooking with vodka, there's no residual alcohol problem. So just use it for,
thank you, Gia.
For cooking projects only. All right. Thank you. Bye.
And, Lachelle, what do you think about that, that other people have done this with the pie crust? It does something to the texture that's nice, just the science there.
Yeah, it's definitely the science. I'm pretty sure I heard about that. Honestly, I want to say on a cooking show, someone like Elton Brown, who does the super scientific, you know, and he gets into the science behind it. So that was a perfect breakdown of that. And yeah, there's definitely science when it comes to baking in general. So as much as you can kind of know about that, that allows you to, that's where the flexibility can come in when you understand the science, right? Because with baking, it's harder to be flexible than it is with cooking. So,
all right. Let's take another phone call from a listener in our last few minutes here. We've got Karen on the phone. Karen, what do you want to tell us about pies and how you bake your pies?
Hi, I grew up baking pies with my mom, and we used a vinegar and egg pie crust. But when I left home, I learned about Julia Child, which transformed me to this wonderful, easy recipe. So your listeners should not be intimidated if they try it. It's from Baking with Julia, and it makes like 5 or 6 different rounds. So roll your dough into mix your dough together and then divide it into 6 different rounds and flatten them a little bit, put them in the freezer or put them in the fridge, and you'll have a wonderful pie crust. Easy. And all you need is a pastry blender. I use a Cuisinart, which is so easy, but you can't over mix it. Mix it a little bit.
I love this, Karen. I love all the ideas that we're getting. And just in our last minute, you know, again, 5 years, your life has really changed a lot, Rachel, since you made your first pie to now being the, you know, co-owner there of Pie and Mighty. And just what words of encouragement do you have to new bakers who want to get in on this and be known for their pies as well? Any advice on how to be a confident pie maker?
I think, you know, we started out with comfort with failure. And I think, you know, if there's a couple of things that I've learned from people that I admire and people that I follow along the way, the ability to laugh, the ability to have fun, the ability to not take yourself and the process of making pie so seriously. It's one of the desserts left that is truly humble. It can be really gorgeous. It can be really beautiful, but
she doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. Grandma's pie wasn't beautiful. You know,
we're out of time. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we're out of time. This has been a delightful hour of conversation, and just want to let our listener know we're still taking your pie recipes. You can go to nprnews.org/tell. Send us your recipes and we'll share some of the favorite ones on our website. Our guest today, Rachel Swan, the co-owner of Pie and Mighty, as well as Ken Heydrick, founder of the Pie Academy, and Twin City chef Lachelle Cunningham. Thank you for your time. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you again Monday at 9.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.